Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. When we consider the word diversity, a country and city of more inclusivity comes to mind, obviously. But our next guest says that efforts for diversity have been exclusionary themselves, particularly toward Asian Americans. And we're seeing how that lack of inclusivity is playing out in different parts of our society. In the political arena, where despite being the fastest growing demographic in both America and New York City, Asian Americans are the least likely demographic to hold elected office. In the last mayoral election, where Republican Curtis Sliwa was surprisingly strong among AAPI, Asian American and Pacific Islander voters, despite that not being the case in the Virginia election this year, the other big bellwether, and in backlash against Asian Americans in the city, obviously, where, as you certainly know or should know, Asian American, anti-Asian American hate crimes are up 361% this year compared to last. Joining us now to talk about all of this is Frank Wu. He's the president of Queens College, and he's the author of the book, Yellow, Race in America, Beyond Black and White. And he had an op-ed last week in the Daily News, maybe you saw it, titled Inclusion, Beyond Black, Brown, and White. And we'll also get into some CUNY issues with COVID rising and a few other things. President Wu, great to have you back on the show. Welcome back to WNYC.
Great to be here. And, you know, I'm in downtown Flushing, Queens, which if you haven't been here in the past 25 years, it is heavily Asian American. And that's what revitalized Flushing, Queens. So if you hear some background noise, it's people from all over Asia and their American born children and grandchildren in a place that, you know, many had given up on. And it's come roaring back because of this migration.
And you start your op-ed with an observation that you had an event in the city. Would you tell us that story and what you think it represents?
Sure. So I was honored to be invited. I was just one of the attendees. There are about two dozen speakers. Big event. You know, I didn't mention who it is, and I won't, because it's not about pointing fingers. And when this op-ed came out, so many Asian Americans reached out to me, and they said, wow, that happened to me, too. Just last week. So this is a common story. So at the event, they were all about diversity, equity, and inclusion. They touted it. They talked all about it. They had about two dozen speakers, more than two dozen. They had speakers who were white. They had speakers who were African-American. They had speakers who were Latino or Latinx in the new term that's being used. They had speakers of every background. They all talked about how they had speakers of every background, except they didn't. They didn't have any Asian-American speakers. No one. East Asian, South Asian, Southeast Asian. And I'm not just talking someone in a prominent role. I mean, not a single one, even though that's 10% of the population, the fastest growing demographic. And even though the whole theme was how do we build back after COVID in an inclusive way, but it wasn't inclusive.
And in the New York City mayoral election, as I mentioned, there was a big swing of AAPI voters to the GOP. Curtis Sliwa's strongest voting bloc, from what I've read, was Asian American voters. He garnered 44% of the vote in precincts with majority Asian voters, higher even than the 40% of the vote he received in precincts with majority white voters. And I will say that goes against the national trend. Asian American voters were solidly for Joe Biden, much more solidly than that. And even in Virginia, from what I read, where the Republican Glenn Youngkin won that race, kind of shocking the Democratic Party political establishment, the Asian American vote for the Democrat in that race, Terry McAuliffe, stayed at the same high 60s percentage that it was for Biden. So what's going on in New York City?
Yeah, well, I have a hypothesis, you know, and I want to talk to my friends who are advocates for civil rights, as I am. One of the things I'm all about is bridge building. And I always try to make clear, bringing in Asian Americans does not hurt. It helps the historic struggle for Black equality. And we can touch upon how Asian Americans have been involved in that. But to answer your question directly, here's my prediction, a little bit of a warning for my friends. If people who care about civil rights, who care about diversity, equity, and inclusion, don't reach out to Asian Americans, do you know who will? People who don't care about the historic struggle for Black equality. What I mean by that is Asian Americans are being courted. It's a big voting block. And folks who aren't enthusiastic, and you know, even though most of us, we talk about DEI, and certainly on college campuses, we embrace it. It's always been part of the identity of institutions such as Queens College. Not everyone's in favor. Some folks, truth is, they're a little indifferent to the suffering of people who are Black or brown, and they're reaching out to Asian Americans, and they're saying, join us, come over to our side. And I think that's some of what we're seeing, especially because Asian Americans have this understandable concern about violence. You mentioned the hate crimes. Boy, those statistics, they just came out. NYPD has new statistics. Anti-Semitic attacks and attacks on Asian Americans up. We're talking up an unbelievable rate, more than any other type of hate crime. And we've seen those viral videos, people being spit on, shoved to the ground so their bones are broken, kicked in the head, shoved in front of subway trains, stabbed, shot. You can't look at that and say, oh, that's random. You can't look at that and say, oh, come on, what's the big deal? It's serious attacks, and it starts with those racial slurs. Go back to where you came from. This disease is your fault, you know? So it's all come out aggressively because of this pandemic that's being blamed on people who've got nothing to do with it.
And almost, you wrote in your op-ed that almost all Asian American professionals have had the shocking experience of being told that they are not eligible for a program advertised as meant for minorities because they are not regarded as the right type of person of color. They are acutely aware that they are not white either. So this is a difficult conversation to have, right? This is saying to some Black and brown leaders, hey, you're not taking us seriously enough, just as white leaders aren't?
Well, I want to do this in a bridge-building way, in a positive way. And I always point out Asian Americans have been around a lot longer than people think. Take a look. Don't believe me. You can Google this. Asian Americans fought in the Union and Confederate armies during the Civil War. I'm not talking one or two. I'm talking hundreds. There's a whole book published on that. And they're part of civil rights. Look at the assassination of Malcolm X, been in the news again, and you can find the iconic photos. He's been shot. He's dying. He's gasping, drawing his last breaths at the Audubon Ballroom in New York City in 1965. Look at all the photos, and you'll see at the top of the photo, and you might be puzzled by this, there's an Asian-American woman. Her name's Yuri Kochiyama, and she was one of his closest confidants and colleagues during the last years of his life, someone who's Japanese-American, who was there fighting for Black equality. So I always try to do this in a bridge-building way to say, look, we believe in the same thing. But the reason it's hard to talk about is we think of race as Black and white, and there's a couple stereotypes about Asian-Americans. The first is crazy rich Asians. Oh, come on, what do you have to complain about? You're all doing well. You have $10 million and plunk it down and buy a condo, and you got no concerns, even though Asian Americans suffer discrimination and poverty. The other is this perpetual foreigner syndrome. Oh, come on. Just, you know, you can always go back to where you came from, even though so many Asian Americans like me are native born. They're sixth generation Asian Americans, or even Asian Americans whose ancestors came on the Mayflower. And when I say that, people say, oh, come on. Because they're Anglo-Asian, they're mixed. And on one side of the family, they can trace their ancestry back all the way to the founding of the nation. And so Asian Americans aren't all fresh off the boat. But you know, there's nothing wrong with being fresh off the boat. A TV sitcom has reappropriated that phrase. And these are people who made a decision. They've staked their lives on this side of the Pacific Ocean. We're real Americans, yet people don't think so.
But there are those who might say, while everything you said is true, there's still no comparison between all of that and the discrimination that Black Americans in particular have faced over time. And there is a hierarchy here in real life of discrimination and the effects on people in those communities. And that needs to come first. And so when there are conflicts, like over college admissions and what is so-called merit versus so-called justice, people are choosing up sides on those things. How do you address those complexities?
Yeah, through bridge building and through discussion and dialogue. And I'm not naive. There's conflict. But every time we have conflict, we can make it worse or we can make it better. And one of the worst things we can do is divide and conquer. And so Asian Americans who are mad about bias, you know what people say to them? Well, blame African Americans. And then African Americans who are mad, well, get mad at newcomers to the nation. There's a better way to look at the principles that bind us together as a diverse democracy. And that's what I hope we do. A contest of suffering, you know, it has no winners. And somebody in one of those hate crimes, like the lady who was beaten until she was in critical condition in Midtown Manhattan. You've probably seen this video. It's terrible. I don't encourage you to watch it. But then those two doormen at the end, they go and they literally close the door on the scene. They don't even help her. You know, when you look at something like that, you have to say that person deserves our sympathy. And you don't have to be Asian American. She was of Filipino background, headed to church. You don't have to be Asian American to look at that and say there's something wrong when somebody is viciously attacked like that because of a racial stereotype, because they're assumed to have something to do with a virus. And so I always try to reach out. I began my academic career at a predominantly Black institution, and I always, in everything I do, want to say to my friends, my colleagues who are African American, who are of any background, friends who are Jewish, let's work in coalition. There's a way that we can find a set of common principles here that we all agree to, no matter where our ancestors came from.
My guest is the president of Queens College, Frank Wu. He is also author of the book, Yellow, Race in America Beyond Black and White, and of the op-ed in the Daily News last week titled Inclusion Beyond Black, Brown, and White. 212-433-WNYC. If you have a question for Frank Wu, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. While some calls are coming in, President Wu, how is Queens College? Are you taking any steps to close or go remote or do anything to adjust to Omicron in these last days before winter break?
Yeah. Yes, we're trying to do things as safely as possible. We're just about wrapped up. Anything that's happening on campus, all the students are fully vaccinated in order to come on campus. We do have an exception if there's a health issue or if it's a bona fide faith-based sort of thing. We respect that. About 98.5%, almost 99% of our students are fully vaccinated, but we've been as cautious as you can be. I know this has been devastating for our community. We're planning a memorial, and by our count, at least 40 stakeholders died. That's not even including family members of our faculty, staff, and students. But we have had zero campus spread because we've been really very cautious. We've ramped up very slowly, and I intend to continue to do that. By the way, higher education is one of those ways you bring people together, because on our campus, our students in their homes, they speak 83 different languages, but they're united because they come and sit next to one another in the classroom, they make friends, and they want to move up in the world. So higher education is, that's the engine of the American dream. And at the end of the day, I'm an optimist about this. I wrote that op-ed not because I don't want to participate. I wrote it because I want to be a part of rebuilding. And I want other Asian Americans to want to be a part and not to be isolated. This is all about participating in America and helping, especially now with this pandemic.
President Wu, how is access to a Queens College education right now with that amazing diversity, maybe the most diverse county in the world that we know Queens has, and the way it's represented? Therefore, at Queens College, as a public institution serving the borough, you know, there's new publicity to a movement, I guess new energy in a movement to try to make CUNY free again, because even though it's so much cheaper than most other college educations, it's still thousands of dollars a year, and that's still a barrier for some people. Do you support that movement?
You know, thanks to the state of New York and to the city, almost half, not quite half, but almost half our students pay nothing. And increasing access is so important. I am dedicated to to figuring out how do we do that, working with public officials who believe, as we do, that this is why the whole City University of New York system and why Queens College, why we were set up. If you go back and look at the founding documents, it says right in those documents that's to educate the immigrants coming to New York City. And that has remained true. You know, I never criticize any other institution of higher education, but I'll just say this. It's just fact. There are schools out there that to go there for 1 year, it costs 10 times, 10x what it would cost for our tuition. And let me repeat, more than 40%, almost half of our students already are paying nothing for tuition. The more that we can get that number up, the more that we can offer this, because we know it works. It works to improve the lives of those individuals and their kith and kin, their extended networks, their whole community. It brings up the world. And that's what New York is all about. It's about welcoming people here, and they all become New Yorkers. Doesn't matter where you're from, what your color, creed, what your faith is, what language you speak. If you want to be part of this, what is still the greatest city in the world, we've welcomed you, and higher education in our campus is part of that.
But is that to say you think it's affordable enough as it is?
Well, no. The more we can do to make it affordable, yeah, I wouldn't want anyone to mistake that. The more we can improve this access, the better. It's a matter of figuring it out together. How do we do this? I'm always trying to talk to everyone about the value. This isn't charity. This is an investment. And that's all the more true now because we need people to participate in building back. They need to be retrained, upskilled is the phrase that's being used. And we're ready to play our role doing that for everyone. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter if you're undocumented. We welcome students who are undocumented because we know that so many go on to great careers and contribute, and they're taxpayers. The first undocumented member of Congress, Adriana Espiat, is a Queens College alum and proud of it.
What do you make of the reasons for the surge in anti-Asian American hate crimes? It was easy in 2020 to say Donald Trump because he kept saying China virus and things like that. What about in 2021?
Well, this hatred that's been motivated in part by the pandemic, you know, one of the things Asian Americans have said all along is it's not new. You go back, you study the history, Asian immigrants were being lynched in the 19th century. There was an Exclusion Act passed in 1882 targeting the Chinese and then expanded in 1917 to all Asians. I actually study history, and that's one of the subjects that I teach. So none of this is new, but the awareness is new. And what has made it continue is not just the pandemic. It's this image that Asian Americans are all well-to-do foreigners. It's this idea Asia's taken over the world, that U.S. and China are locked into this global geopolitical struggle with only one winner. And I'll just point out, the people who are Asian Americans, you know what? They came over here. They want to be part of America. The bet that my family made was on this nation and its ideals. So when people say to me, hey, you know, if Asia becomes dominant, you're going to be all set. I say, no, that means my family made the wrong bet again and again, because I'm an American through and through.
Let's get at least one phone call in here. Desiree in Park Slope, you're on WNYC with Frank Wu, the president of Queens College. Hi, Desiree.
Hi. I am a graduate of Queens College in the library school. So nice to meet you, sir. I wanted to say that I have been wanting to call in about this issue for so long. I would like to ask Brian to never say the phrase black and brown again. It is so reductive. It has no meaning. Black and brown, in terms of skin color, crosses literally all kinds of people. Middle Eastern people are brown. Pacific Islanders are brown. And I know that that's not who you're talking about when you say black and brown. So it is incredibly exclusive. And I also think that, you know, black people are 13% of the population. So, yes, we were enslaved humans at one point, but alone we could not change anything in this country at 13% of the population. So there has to be a way for media to be way more nuance when they talk about people of color and the issues of people of color, which,
well,
by
let me ask
way,
you a
are
follow-up question about that.
Yeah.
Desiree, because mm-hmm. I agree with you. This is really important to everybody to get terminology right. But recently, I used black and brown because mm-hmm. the activists used black and brown, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
That's what the people who
Let
are fighting for diversity and
do.
Inclusion and equality are tending to say these days. So what would be better?
Well, I'm black. I've been black all my life. I lived in Jackson, Mississippi until I was a teenager. So I understand the importance of having proper terminology. I'm also an activist. I have been since I was 16. You don't have to use the same language that they're using. In the same way that there are tons of people who are of Hispanic or Latino or Latina descent who hate Latinx, you know, we're not a Borg. We're not like homogenous. We don't all think the same way. So you're making a choice to use terms that some people like and some people don't, no matter what you do, is my point. Right?
And it's saying, in the title of the book, President Wu, right? Race in America Beyond Black and White. The op-ed is Beyond Black, Brown and White.
Right. You know, Desiree is absolutely right. It's all about coalitions because no single community is able to win whatever it is they want, win an election or get justice. All these movements have been about coalition and these communities come together. There are Afro-Latinos and no one ever talks about this, so I'm going to mention it. There are Afro-Asians. You know, my favorite jazz artist, Charles Mingus, was Afro-Asian. Look at his second album, Mingus Dynasties in Chinese Robes, as an homage to his grandfather. So when I talk about Asian American, I want to make sure I reach out. That includes South Asian, includes Southeast Asian refugees, it includes Afro-Asians, it includes adoptees who people don't talk about either. And inclusion is incredibly complicated. It's hard work. But it makes us better as a society. So it's not just ideals and principles. It's also, if you look at the nitty gritty, you start off talking about the New York City mayoral race. You want to win an election. If you only line up voters of your racial group, you are not going to win an election. A candidate has to appeal to multiple groups, many constituencies. And that's my message. Bridge building, coalitions, and principles and pragmatism.
Let me come back to one final Omicron question before we run out of time, or really even COVID writ large. You said there was zero campus spread at Queens College. Do you mean over the whole pandemic
campus,
and even now? Because I know people who are getting Omicron who avoided the other stuff, and they don't even know how they're getting it.
Yeah. We have had cases, but it's folks, to the best of our knowledge, nobody has given it to somebody else while at one of our events or classes. And I can't promise it's going to stay that way. We're going to reduce the risk, but I know it's impossible to eliminate. And Omicron, boy, it is scary. So every time I make a decision, I remind myself, I'm not just making a decision. I'm trying to show that I'm competent and thoughtful, look at the science, and above all, that I have empathy. And that's how all this comes together. The pandemic has revealed there are those who want to divide and those who want to unite. And our nation, it has been torn apart during this time. And I'm determined to try to bring us together. And that's what Asian American does. It's a coalition. The people who call themselves that, their grandparents were fighting total wars against one another. They come here, they're told you all look alike. And then they realize we need to say we're Americans. So that term itself is about bridge building. And it's not easy, but we have to keep at it.
President of Queens College, Frank Wu. He is the author of the book Yellow, Race in America Beyond Black and White, and now a Daily News op-ed called Inclusion Beyond Black, Brown and White. President Wu, we always appreciate it. Thank you for coming on today.
Thanks so much. A pleasure. Take care.